Hello and welcome to the Guelph Politicast. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico. If this is your first time streaming or downloading the show, Guelph Politicast is an interview program where I talk to politicians, activists, and people of note making a difference or just trying to make life in the Royal City more interesting. For previous episodes of the Guelph Politicast, you can find them on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, or you can subscribe through iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Today I talked to Ward 1 Councillor Dan Gibson and Ward 6 Councillor Mark McKinnon. It's 2018, it's an election year for our municipal government, and although nominations don't officially open until the 1st of May, the question of who will be running and what are their chances will be a part of many conversations until then if they aren't already. Now the horse race is fun and all, but there's still a job on city council waiting for the people who win, and sometimes that doesn't mean what they think it means. Life on city council is the topic of this week's Guelph Politicast. Let's face it, elections are more or less the same. The incumbent runs to defend their record, the challengers run to say that they can do better. I was interested, though, in what happens in between. When the challengers become the incumbents, how does their view of government change? Were they true to their convictions? What effect does being on the inside have on the way that they decide even the most contentious issues of the day? These are the sorts of questions I wanted to put to two of council's relatively rookie members, Dan Gibson and Mark McKinnon. Gibson and McKinnon were both elected to council in 2014. They're both, it's safe to say, small C fiscal conservatives. They're both relatively younger members of council with young families, and they both represent parts of town that are booming, albeit in some specifically different ways. What they don't have in common, as you have seen in the Guelph Today, surely, is a firm commitment to re-election. McKinnon is a yes, Gibson is a maybe. That decision and the information and insight into making that for the councillors is one of the first things we talk about. More than that, though, the thing I wanted to get at with this podcast was not their stance on certain issues and not the politics of Guelph in January 2018, or even whether or not they had decided on running again this year. No, I was interested in the transformation. How does decision-making at City Hall look from the inside as compared to the outside? What is the learning curve once you become a practicing city councillor? What abilities must one have in order to hold on to the principles they ran with while adapting to new information? And at the end of the day, how do they think serving as a city councillor has changed them? Although unofficial, this is a companion piece to a podcast I did in November 2014 with then-incoming councillors James Gordon and Phil Ault, who were just about to start their first term at the time. That was Guelph Politicast number 20 for the record, and I asked the other two rookie councillors about their goals and expectations as they begun training for the transfer of power. Perhaps these bookends will be instructional for any of you out there who are considering a potential run for city council of your own. Hopefully, though, they won't talk you out of it. So I caught up with Dan Gibson and Mark McKinnon last week in studio.
Hi, I'm Mark McKinnon. I'm a Ward 6 councillor in the deep south of Guelph.
Hi, everyone. Dan Gibson here, Ward 1 city councillor, representing the downtown and the east end of the city.
And I've gathered you all here today. It is an election year, as you both know. And let's start off with the most obvious part of this, which I think is re-election. And I think if people who are tuning in want to know what your intentions are, and I think this was kind of made clear in the Guelph Today post too, but Mark, you said straight up, I am running.
I intend to run come May, that's correct.
Right. And then Dan, you are kind of unsure yet, is that fair?
Yeah, I've always tried to maintain intellectual honesty on this issue, or this question, I guess. My family and I are going to make that decision in the spring. We always sit down and think, should we make this decision now? Mm. But it always seems to be the wrong time for us with life. And we weren't making it the right – like you never want to make the decision if you're going to run or not during a budget, because that's when you're going to say, no, I'm never doing this again. But you want to make it during a time where you're grounded and you're level-headed about what the challenge is and the four-year commitment that it takes. Mm. And you don't want to make that lightly. So my wife and I are committed to making that decision. We'll be pretty clear about it in the spring. But for the time being, there's no rush.
Can you talk about, and this goes to you too, Mark, like some of your considerations in what – obviously you're too –
not to cast everyone else in council as old, but you were probably two of the more younger members. You have, you know, careers that you're in the middle of. You have young families. You know, I imagine that's a primary consideration.
It certainly is. That was one of the reasons, and I never entered politics until the last election, because the getting a family situation and a career situation up to a certain point where I thought it was a good idea that I could contribute positively at that point. My motivation for running for 4 years ago, I had said back then that if I had thought that there were people that would do a significantly better than a job than I could do, then I would, of course, want the best candidates to run, and I would be happy not running. I believe that I could contribute positively when I decided to run last year. And so looking ahead, I love serving. I think that I will want to continue to serve, and I believe that there's still work unfinished, that I bring a perspective to council that may not be completely unique, but I think it is overall a positive contributor to the environment of council, to the decision that council makes. And if I didn't think I could contribute in a way that that was very positive and could move the city forward in the positive direction, I would step back if I didn't think I was a net contributor. But I believe that I am bringing a good perspective to council. I think that I have benefited Ward 6 and the entire city of Guelph. And that's not bragging. It's just I believe that I've contributed positively, and so I'd like to continue contributing positively.
You live in the Deep South, but you're a downtown business owner, which is as better as Guelph as you can get.
Yeah, then that's true, and that's been a bit of a difference in the past couple years. So certainly my personal path has changed in a way that has connected me more to the different parts of Guelph and the understanding that challenges that business owners face or that residents face, and having, you know, two teenagers in the city now, understanding how that works out with recreation centers or transit or whatnot. So I believe that I have a perspective. It's a good perspective. I believe I contribute to the city, and I make good decisions along with the rest of council. And I think that if at any point I could not say that I'm benefiting the city, then I would step back. So I think I can't do so for the next time.
Yeah, you touched on a great point, Adam. And it's something that I think Mark and I do bring to the table in terms of the sort of the youth vote, I guess you could call it. We're on the fringe of the millennials. I think I'm just like 1 or 2 years outside of millennial. But the fact is, you know, when I look on to council of years past, I didn't really see all the time. Maybe Cam Guthrie was the exception in the last term, but I didn't really see a lot of voices for young professionals who are working in the city, trying to raise a family, paying down their mortgage, living in that reality. There's a lot of more senior level people who have already finished that aspect of their life and are now approaching retirement or are working late in their careers. So I really didn't see a lot of my demographic reflected. So paying down your mortgage, all your kids are in programs, you're at the rec center twice a week, you're at the hockey rink twice a week, you're at the Ball Diamond in the summertime. I wanted to see, I think I've been able to bring that a little bit perspective to the table, and I think Mark is in the same situation where we're raising kids in the city. So from that perspective, that is another motivation to run, because I think that voice needs to be heard on council, especially around budget time. So from that perspective, that's motivation to continue going. But my motivations are the same. I ran on some pretty big things, not just taxation, but, you know, getting a little bit more attention to the east end of the city, York Road redevelopment, recommercializing that whole corridor. And then obviously supporting our downtown, as well as the Emico site, which is still a very important file to me, and getting that site up and going. So those are all things that are still big carrots for me to continue pushing. That's just where my head's at right now.
That's the practical considerations of what's on council. It has nothing to do with the time commitment. And
well, that is a very important aspect of it as well. The time commitment is real, so make sure that you have a very supportive partner, especially if you have a family. Make sure that your partner is fully supportive and on board and understands the commitment it's going to take. You are going to be away from your house 1 to 2 nights a week at a minimum. You are in the public eye, and you need to be aware of what that means for not just for yourself, but for your spouse and for what it might mean for your kids. So those are all practical elements that you should be sort of putting on the table and making sure you have clear understanding of, and the fact that it's minimum 25 to 30 hours a week of your time that you need to be putting into this to be effective.
The public face aspect of it too, I wanted to address, because that same Guelph Today post, I was looking at it the other day, and of course the very first comment underneath is like, vote them all out. And it's fairly safe to do that behind your computer with your relative degree of distance and anonymity. But in terms of your experience and maybe what your expectations were going into it, and how that has been for you dealing with that personally, because you know you're not just Mark and Dan anymore. You are an appendage or part of the, you know, maybe you're part of the problem in somebody's eyes, part of the, you know, the reasons why certain things can't get done. And how has that been dealing with that?
Yeah, I haven't experienced much difficulty with it. My wife always says she has no clue how she deals with that public facing, how I would deal with it, because not everyone, you know, has the drive, the desire, the knowledge, the skill set, what have you, to do it. Right. But I've been a business owner for a number of years, both in publishing industry, real estate, mortgages. So I've been a more public face for a while now. Mm. So I've been through the worst troll flame wars on the internet that you can be part of. I've been called just about every name under the book. So any decisions that I make on council, you know, sure, they're going to be scrutinized, and people will say that I've made absolutely terrible decisions. And I can confidently say that every decision that I've made that I make from a position of knowledge, not a position of ignorance or lack of knowledge, I'm very confident that I've made the correct decisions. There's nothing I look back and say, well, based on the information that I had, I made the wrong call. I believe I've made the right call every time, because I read up on the files. I make sure I'm as informed as I need to be to make those votes. And so, you know, I say, I'm happy to have some people bring it on, you know, to dump on me. Don't dump on staff.
Yeah.
Staff rarely makes the decisions that people are complaining about. There could be some issues that could be a staffing administration issue, but a lot of the problem people have, whether it's taxation or a service not getting done or a building not getting built or whatnot, is usually about council. So yeah. I'd say bring it on, complain to me, dump on me all you want. I have very big shoulders. I don't mind. And I'd be happy to explain the rationale and decisions about policies and procedures and votes and why they were done a certain way. But in the end, I would just ask people to understand that no one on council has information and is making decision counter to what they believe is the best way to address those information pieces. We may disagree on how we come to a decision, of course, but when I have information, whether it's merging hydro, or whether or not it's a budget number, or building a South End Rec Center, or whatnot. Mm. When I have information, I digest it, I research it, I fully understand the implications of it, and then I vote appropriately. So, yeah, I'm happy to take on the criticism. It's never been an issue for me, and you know, it's just part of being in the public life.
And just so everybody, people that may not be aware, you work in gaming.
Yeah.
So that can make politics sometimes look like a strawberry shortcake tea party.
Well, it can. And, you know, having skill sets and experience with game design, rules design, and knowing how to get around rules, poke holes in rules. I mean, that logical processing that's associated with rules and how they apply really applies in politics all the time. So, yeah, I'm used to dealing with a lot of people that are very savvy and are want to engage in conversations, and I'm always good for conversations, but I don't tolerate people who are bullies or perhaps are not being respectful, and I'll just tune that out.
Right.
You know, I'll hear the message, but I won't hear the person.
But I think of you and Bob in particular when it comes to situations like this, because you have that big empty parcel of land on Starwood that has been empty for years, and when this does come up, when some piece of information does float to the surface about where Loblaws is or where the city is, you get dumped on. You're like, well, why aren't they doing anything? Like, where are the councilors to finally get this built?
That's
you know, it's not that you or Bob or even Mayor Guthrie are sitting on your thumbs thinking, you know.
So there's some words of wisdom that were given to me before I decided to run around this issue. And my father was one who gave me one, actually. He said, Dan, I never want to see you get good at this politics game. He said, I want you to be the exact same person you told people you were going to be on their front door afterwards. Mm. And I've been accused at times of being a bit too straightforward with my verbiage on council. But, you know, since then, I continue to cling to this. People relate to authenticity. Mm. They relate to people. The authenticity point speaks for itself. I'm not performing when I go in front of council. I am simply speaking on behalf of my convictions and what I believe are my constituents' convictions. So I read those comments. I read that very comment, and I thought to myself, vote them all out. Wow, okay. You know, I absorb it because I ask myself, am I still being authentic to the people that I said I would try and support? And when it comes to the East End, never mind that the fact that I live that reality too, right? I look at that mud pile every day when I go to work. So that's my reality. But the fact of the matter is people do need to see us working for that change. I believe that we've done our best to this point, every mechanism we can. And actually on Monday we're talking about the commercial policy review at Committee of the Whole. And I've been working on that file as much as I can micromanage that file as I'm allowed. I have been. I've been doing weekly meetings with our deputy CAO of that file. So that's a big one for us. And we're not going to talk about specific policies, I don't think, here. But that is an opportunity for us to actually correct course in the East End. Say to that monopoly landowner that you're not the only game in town. We are going to open this up a little bit more and let the free market react properly. Because I know, I absolutely know, I've got another email here this morning. I know there are people interested in doing things on York Road. And that's been something that we've been talking about since the election. So, authenticity is a big thing. When you hear criticisms like that, I don't take them personally, but I do take them in because I want to make sure that that gentleman who wrote that comment, when he's watching me, he wants to see something authentic. That's what I think. And maybe he lost that through the hydro file, and that wasn't a very easy file to navigate. But we need to make sure we're working on that trust for sure.
You ever get defensive? Not that you get confrontational with the people asking the question, but maybe just... Yeah, in your own head, like, how could he say this?
That's an obvious reaction, right? But to be quite honest, you know, when I'm up there, I get defensive really in the debate with my fellow counselors just because when we get ideologically stuck on something.
Right.
But I never really see maybe it's just me. I don't see constituents as opponents to me. I see them as the voices, and we need to make sure we're shepherding those voices. So when I get a comment like, vote them all out, I need to I reflect on that. I do. I say to myself, am I working? Am I showing that person authenticity that I promised I would?
And personally, I am never going to have a problem or criticize someone that doesn't understand an issue, doesn't understand how the policies and procedures of council works and how our voting works. No problem with people not understanding that. But I do have a problem with people not understanding that and then making conclusions that we also don't understand it.
Right.
And that's the problem that I have. Is like I get it that you have an opinion about a particular topic and you're not happy with how it particularly went in your way or didn't go in your way. But don't assume or criticize a council for also not having those perspectives. Right. So, the vote them all out. It's like, well, clearly we all look at issues and vote appropriately and we do our research. I mean, I won't say everyone has the same perspective, but we all have the same drive to do a good job. And I think that needs to be kept in consideration, is everyone needs to ask themselves, how much do I not know about something that I think I know about? Because you don't know until you don't know.
Right.
It's an excellent point, Mark. The comments that you don't see online that I get personally, they float me past that type of blanket statement. So the one that I heard recently was from a very strong supporter, was involved in the campaign 4 years ago, went door to door with me, distributed flyers, and they've since said, Dan, I didn't really know you 4 years ago, but I kind of trusted your process. And I didn't agree with your vote here. Like they pointed to one thing. I didn't like where you voted there. But they said, what you have shown and what I now trust in, I do trust the process. So right. I like where you voted on that issue, but I do trust that you took everything into account and you voted according to your process, your straightforward process where you're evaluating public comments, evaluating staff's comments, and coming to a rational decision.
But one of the things that is interesting to me is the question is how often do you hear that, where it's like, you and I do not always agree, but however, we agree 7 out of 10 times, and so I will agree with your, I will defer to your judgment on the other three. Because just the observance of politics now, modern politics, is you and I, me as a voter, you as a candidate, have to be in lockstep.
Absolutely, yeah.
You move your left foot, I move my left foot. You move your right foot, I move my right foot. And that's, I think, where the kind of vote the bums out mentality comes from, where it's like, you voted this on hydro, you're done. Mm-hmm. I don't care that you voted exactly how I would have on everything else that's happened in the last 3 years, but this was the straw. And
that's the difficult field we navigate. I think you're pointing on something that has sort of infiltrated politics in general, is that the brand loyalty is so strong now across party lines, and from that perspective, there's going to be some refreshing point where someone navigates through politics and adopts good pragmatic solutions from across the party.
Right.
It's just whether or not there's enough political equity there at this point. I've always said there's probably enough room for a few more parties out there, but it's just where that political territory can be staked out, because you're right. People are very brand loyal these days, and that's a difficult place to be.
But that's also where municipal politics can break through, is because there is no brand, there's no party structure.
It is refreshing on many points that I can be fiscally as strong as I want to be fiscally, and then turn around and still speak positively to lowering our emissions as a city. Those are all great things that are free of party politics. So, it is a nice place to be sometimes.
Yeah, we have particular issues where, and I don't have a problem with people being single voter issues, particularly if it's something that affects them directly, something right in front of their house, something that affects their children or their transportation or whatnot. We usually don't get the same level of ideological issues that you might get at a provincial or federal level, which is involving maybe a human rights issue or something that's like much, much bigger, maybe moral or ethical, where I wouldn't say there's many moral or ethical things that happen on the municipal level in terms of those critical decisions. Usually they're much more technical in nature.
Yeah.
But I mean, I've had people on certain files, the ones that are very contentious, say, well, I voted for you last election, I want you to vote this way. Like, you have to do this because I voted for you. And that's not how politics works. We don't have true democracy. We have a representational democracy. So understand, you elect the person that you think is going to represent what you think is the best, whether it's your interests or the city's interests. And people can be as centered as they want on their own self, but you elect someone that you think will do the best job, but you don't get a say and a vote in every single issue. You get to vote for one person or two people in Guelph who's going to represent who you think will represent the majority of stuff, but there's going to be differences, absolutely. And as long as Dan was saying, you're authentic, you're representing what you were selling, you're not playing the shell game that people accuse politicians of doing, where they say one thing and they'll do something else.
Right.
As long as you're not doing that, then I didn't talk about what's going to happen with hydro mergers when the election was on, because it wasn't on the radar. So no one asked me my opinion because we weren't talking about that. So everyone who voted for me, they didn't vote for me on a hydro issue, and I had to do my best job navigating that file on what is the best way to do a particular vote. And people who voted for me may disagree or agree, and people who didn't vote for me, maybe they think I voted exactly how they would, and so I please them. But in a representational democracy that we have, you elect your representative, and they're going to vote on a bazillion issues, and you're not. You're going to vote on one issue, which is who you're going to elect every 4 years.
Right. No one's likely to get upset about how you vote on the urban design manual. But
probably not, but there'll be some people. Yeah. There's for some people they have, it's their thing, their issue. And I think it's unfortunate and particularly on the municipal issue, which isn't that ethic morality issues that come up on a higher level government. I think it's unfortunate if someone casts a vote on a single issue, but if it's important enough for them, that's what their representational democracy system is. But I'd say anyone, whether it's Dan or anyone in council, when the election comes up, look at someone's total body of work and say, how effective were they at moving forward the best interest of the residents in the city and how I would like them to move forward, and vote based on that, not on a single issue.
You did mention procedure and policy, and I did want to tackle that as part of the learning curve for you both coming on as rookie councillors in 2014, because municipally, we're on the bottom rung. You know, there are things that the provinces says we can do, the things that the federal government says we can do. There are things that are expected from the constituents. And I'm wondering what when you came on to council, coming from the campaign trail, where maybe you were, and maybe just observing city council like I do, and not being as well versed in what the procedure and what the limitations of the job were. What was that learning curve like coming onto council and then seeing what the extent, or perhaps another way to put it is the limitation of your powers, and how does that jibe with maybe the way constituents see how you're voting? You know, in other words, like maybe what do you know now that you didn't know then that has affected your politics?
I think to say the learning curve is steep is an understatement. the interworkings of working on a board, effectively, is what you're doing. You're working on a majority votes board, understanding the dynamics of that, but also the limitations of you as a counselor. We're not an autocratic society. We cannot just speak it into being as a council. We have to work on it collectively with staff, through staff. So that type of reactionary, I can get it done immediately, was something that I won't say I struggled with, but I needed to understand that full breadth of how things work. The first 2 years of this job were incredible. As busy and as tense and as stressful as they were really good learning experience. I love challenges. It was that challenge I was looking for. And so now that we're into, I think maybe that was reflected in the first 2 years of this council, the stressful back and forth. But now that we're kind of hitting our stride, as this council has, we're starting to all, where we can, find the common ground and work together and get big files pushed forward. So, yeah, the learning curve is absolutely steep. And trust me, on the campaign trail, there's a lot of conviction. A lot of very convicted people who want to make a difference, and those are great. But you also eat a little bit of humble pie when you get elected and realize that you weren't right on every single one thing that you spoke about on the campaign trail, and you need to absorb that and sort of learn again how to operate at that level. And for me, I mean, I got district energy wrong on the campaign trail, and when I got into office, I realized just what that actually was, and that was humbling for me. I talked about that at council, and there's a very steep learning curve. Yeah.
Although I'd say you didn't get the district energy wrong. It was more the implementation in Guelph.
Yes.
That you might have had a different perspective on that, but because district energy is an awesome system.
Concept-wise, we were right. And I was willing to champion the concept, but when I actually saw what the file looked like, I needed to get honest about that, to bring some intellectual honesty to that, what was happening on that file.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, for me, I did feel that I had eyes wide open coming into the this year, where I kind of understood how we're not running the city, we're managers of the staff who's running the city. And I think I had a decent understanding, but it was magnified even further, the levels of reports and departments and committees was a little surprising for me. I understand I'm not making decisions on every single minor thing. I'm not a micromanager. I am oversight. But I was surprised how many layers underneath that there were. And so navigating through that and understanding how the departments work and who you're supposed to talk to and who you're not supposed to talk to, I think is going to be a challenge for anyone, particularly if you didn't have the perspective going in. But I had talked to several counselors in advance before I was going to stand for election. And so, yeah, the big thing is everyone expects you to be able to make things happen, make decisions and get things going. But as a council, we're just one vote of 13 to enact, to discuss major policy issues, not operational issues.
Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously you are elected to make decisions, and you probably in that process feel pretty strong in your ability to make tough decisions. So I'm going to phrase it this way. Have you found that being a city councilor has altered how you make decisions or how you feel you work with your decision-making process? Because, you know, in the past life, you were making decisions as Mark, or, you know, with your family, or as Dan, and with your family on a more kind of like individual basis. But now you're making a decision on behalf of, you know, the several thousand people in your ward, and then also as part of the 120 some odd thousand people of Guelph. So, I mean, that probably has a very specific effect on how you feel about how you make decisions and in what way you go with those decisions. And maybe is there ever any self-doubt as well?
Maybe I'll start. So I've had a few people approach me and ask me what it took and whether or not they should or they were considering running for council. And my first response to them really is just make sure you know who you are. Mm. To know who you are will carry you beyond the campaign. Mm. You can the campaign is unfortunately at times gets dumbed down to a sell job. I'll be frank. But once you're through a campaign, make sure you know how you come to decision making, and just again know who you are as a person. Ask yourselves the tough questions, because when you're in the council chair, those questions are going to be asked of you, and you're going to be tested on those. So, try and come to grasp with, you know, how much a part of life is government meant to be for people.
Right,
that's a basic question. Now you can be very. On the social spectrum, you can be very, it's a very broad spectrum, but just have a general understanding of where you want to end up, because people are looking for that sort of level of intellect and sort of independent decision making. And when you get on council, if people start seeing you sort of washing in the waves, we've seen many councillors before that get elected, and within 4 years, people have decided that they don't want them because they just don't know where they're going. Mm. They don't know what they're thinking, and they're kind of like a wild card. And people like, again, authenticity, but they also like to they like to know that they can trust your process. And that's something that I continue to tell people. Just make sure you know who you are. It doesn't matter who you are. Just make sure you know who you are before you step into this, because it will be tested. You will be tested.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things I've always known about myself for quite a while is I'm what I call a high-function analytical. So extremely analytical in my approach, rational, logical thinking. You know, 8 years of chemistry university has given me a certain perspective of running through scientific methodology and procedures to every decision that I have to make. So the big adjustment with council is now there's a lens that I add to that procedure, which is the public lens and the public feedback. So this same, whether or not there was a public that I'm interacting with or not, the decision process is still going to be the same regarding research, analysis, logical processing, deciding what's the best course of action, looking at staff's recommendations, looking at what I think is the best, whether it's my personal knowledge or the research that I do. But now there's also the filter of, well, what does the public think? And that is not the overwhelming field. People sometimes think, well, everyone was against X, so why did you vote a different way? Mm, well, it's not just, we're not here to just do the will of the people. That would create a terrible situation, because if you ask people, do you want to raise taxes at all?
Right.
The majority would say, no, lower taxes. I would tend to think that, but there are implications and ramifications of doing what the public wants. So, which is why we don't have true democracy and why it's representational. So I will not blindly follow what the majority of the people who talk to me want.
Right.
Because first of all, I'm not talking to 120, 130,000 people to get everyone's opinion. But even if we did a referendum on an issue where I could ask every single person what they thought of something, it doesn't mean I'm going to vote with the majority or the plurality. Because there has to be that filter of, well, what is the best thing? Because I'm going to have a knowledge base based on the research and the position that I'm in that not everyone else is going to have. So every decision has to be filtered through the public lens, where staff, in many ways, they reflect what's good for the city, and then council has to reflect through what's good for the people. Hopefully they're aligned, but when there's not aligned, council then has to come to terms of where is the best position in between those, what is best for the entire process, which is the people and the city, if they're not aligned, for example. So I would say, yeah, that what I've had to do is adjust slightly, but it's really just adding one more step to a scientific process. And now the step is consider what the public wants and needs and how that impacts them.
How top of mind is that for you, given Nisga Road.
Well, that Nisga is a great example. you know, if we go by just people that showed up at council to delegate, then everyone should have voted one way.
Mm.
But that's clearly not all the perspectives. We had to look at what the engineering perspectives were, what best practices are, what is good for all the people that didn't show up to delegate, what we heard through email or discussions privately, as well as what is procedurally just going forward with in, okay, take out all the factors and look at this as another city. What would you reasonably do whenever a bridge needs to get repaired or replaced? What would you do?
Right.
And so, yeah, it was a decision that I have no hesitation on how I voted. It's absolutely correct. And I know that there's people that are extremely upset in my ward for because I did not vote the way that they thought would be the best way to vote.
Mm.
But I'm very confident I voted what I think is the best decision for the people and the city on Nisga, for example. And there's still some issues with Nisga that we're going to be tackling this year to get that done. I'm still particularly interested in making sure we get a bridge that's done correctly to restrict truck traffic. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I'll be meeting with staff to discuss. And we have to look at reports and whatnot. But yeah, Nisga is probably the best example that's affected Ward 6, where the public, I didn't vote what the outcry of the public wanted. I voted what I thought was the best decision, which in the end may have pleased more people because not every, you know, the silent majority type of thing, people that didn't come out and didn't say shut it down or keep it one line or whatnot. They just sat at home and played with their kids like they would normally do. They didn't get engaged, but they know what they'd want. But that's something that, yeah, it's an issue that comes forward. And I think as long as, in me, I approach things rationally and logically, and that's how I prefer to approach decision-making, because I think it's the best way to get a good business decision, as well as with lenses, compassionate and you know, making sure you're doing things on a social level as well. But if you're not thinking about things with rationality but too much emotion, you're bound to maybe not make the best decision, I think.
Right.
For every Nisga, and there's probably about 8 or 9 Niskas before you get to one, where we as council are watching staff, right? We are watching over and sort of using that discerning lens when they bring files forward. So the Speedvale underpass was a great example where council looked at what staff had brought forward and said, no, we actually think that we should get an underpass here. We think that it can be done. And with the help of a number of residents, I credit Councillor Bell for this. Actually, I don't take credit where credit's not due. Councillor Bell put a lot of work into this, and he did a great job educating not only staff but also the public and bringing forward some good, democratic, sort of polite and well-informed delegations. And we actually changed that decision, and staff saw that, and staff brought forward a better recommendation. So, right. So, for the most part, we are looking at, we're taking into account staff's professional opinions, and that oftentimes, unfortunately, contradicts sometimes the majority voice that's coming forward on a file.
Right.
But it is, as Mark says, quite oftentimes definitively in the best interest of the city. And then sometimes we do kind of hold them a little bit firmer, and we can find that file that works, and the Speedvale underpass is a great example of that.
Yeah. It's interesting because thinking back, you know, there was a pretty vocal anti-Walmart movement here. And it was probably even bigger than the people who wanted to keep the Bailey Bridge. But at the end of the day, there's 2 Walmarts here now.
Yeah.
And nobody's protesting that anymore.
Yeah, well, I mean, in some ways it was taken out of our hands going to the OMB.
Sure.
But in the end, people are going to have the issues that are important to them, and they will fight for things that they think are important.
Mm-hmm.
A council will do what it needs to do. But as you said, perspectives change as well.
Yeah.
There was no peep about the second Walmart.
No,
I didn't see people out with a sign. Maybe they felt, oh, well, it's going to happen anyway. We can't do anything about it. Maybe they didn't want a giant empty store with nothing there. They knew something had to go in there.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I can't prescribe the emotions of what going through there, but Walmart is now a part of Guelph as much as any store is, and people go there all the time, and some people don't go there all the time.
Yeah.
And so what's the hot button issue of the day will change, and at some point people look back, and it'll continue to be a hot button issue, and it'll always be there, or it just fades away and no one really cares about it anymore.
And this goes back to my statement about knowing who you are as a person. So the role of government is the role of government to identify sort of this identifiable evil like a Walmart or a Nestle, for example, to identify them and get the people aggressively focusing on one? Or is the role of government to look at the governance that those companies are working in and say, it's not our job to tell which companies can and can't play in this field. Our job is to establish the rules and the guidelines, and that if companies are working within that framework, it's not our role to single them out and sort of get the pickets out for them.
Right.
We may or may not agree with their product, and that's fair. The free market will dictate their success. But the fact is, when we talk about raising Walmart up the flagpole or Nestle up the flagpole, the actual product is not my concern. It's whether or not they are working within the framework that they've been given. If they are, it's not our role as government to attack them. And so, I mean, again, getting back to who we are as people before we run for council, it's an important understanding. The role of government is an important understanding for people to have a firm grip on. And 'cause it will be challenged. It's very, very inviting to get behind a movement like the anti-Nestle or the anti-Walmart movement. It's very inviting and very easy.
Right.
But to understand that might not be the role of government to pick which ones are going to work and which ones aren't. Is the tougher position, the harder position to sell. But I fundamentally believe that for the majority of people, they understand that when it's explained to them that
right.
It's our job to create the governance framework and allow the market to operate within that.
But that's even in a less specific way, because in the case of Nisco, we're talking about just traffic, local traffic, people using the area. And, you know, you may feel that cars shouldn't be driving across the Bailey Bridge, but the fact of the matter was a lot of people were using the Bailey Bridge every day to and fro.
And if we were planning the city again, I think around the horseshoe we heard this, if we were planning the city again, it would be at Stone Road.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is engineering first principles. You don't create two corridors where you already have one.
Yeah.
We have one corridor cutting through that natural environment feature. It's if you were listening to the delegations, it's a pristine environment. Do we want a second swath of corridor cutting right through that environment, or do we want to just focus on the existing corridor that we have? And again, engineering first principles say you don't build two if you've already got one.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what swayed my decision on that file. It wasn't the money. It was the fact that we've already got one avenue through that corridor. We shouldn't be building a second one just because.
Right. Well, before we get too wonkish, let's let's wrap up with this and say in the unfortunate circumstance you either decide not to run or you lose in a race in the fall and your time with council is complete, or complete for now, as we've seen on council. Sometimes people make a comeback. But What do you take with you? What do you take with you from the experience? How have you changed? How is the way you think, the way you make decisions changed, do you think?
I think I've understood Guelph better, which is great. I mean, as someone that lives here, raised a family here, operates several businesses here, it has given me a perspective of things that I had not considered before about the decision-making processes and about how functionality works on that. At the same time, you know, I walk away with, as I would with anything that I've been doing passionately for a number of time. I'm going to walk away with great experiences and great memories, and everything that I learn is going to be filtered into everything else that I do. So it's going to inform how I run my downtown cafe or how I raise my children or encourage them to get into the workforce and whatnot. So, yeah, it would come away with great experiences. Met some excellent people, made some good friends because of that council. And, yeah, in the end, wouldn't necessarily be the end of me serving in some sort of public capacity. I don't know what that would entail in the future, but certainly I think once I started made me realize I kind of don't want to end. I think I can contribute beyond my existing frame of my business, my family. I think I have more to contribute, and that's something that I like to continue doing.
Yeah, I think besides the skill or the sort of the knowledge of the people knowledge, the people skills that you develop in office, if I was to step away or not be reelected, I think the decision my wife and I both made 4 years ago was that we were going to start serving. We were going to start serving our community more so than we were. We had established our careers. We had started our family. And now it was time to start turning around and giving back to the community that supported us while we were coming up, while we were you know, quote unquote, taking. So my wife, she serves on the board of Habitat for Humanity. Mm-hmm. And I think that if I was to step away from city council, I would look to insert myself into some other capacity serving the community. The joys that you get from, you invest in the community that you live in. That's what it comes down to. So whether if it's this capacity or something else, that's what I would take away. Still being able to look my neighbors in the eye, still being able to shake people's hands, that's what I hope to walk away from whenever I do. And if there's another challenge that kind of comes before me that is more intriguing or that I feel like I'd like to take on, then, you know, that's why I'm leaving the next, what is it, 4 months, 5 months? That's why I'm leaving that to that point, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, more to come, as they say. Mm-hmm. We'll see what happens. And so Dan Gibson, Mark McKinnon, thanks so much, and we'll see you around the horseshoe in the months to come.
Yeah, thanks for having us on.
Thank you, Adam.
And once again, that was Ward 1 City Councilor Dan Gibson and Ward 6 Councilor Mark McKinnon. You can follow Councilor Gibson on Twitter at Dan Gibson, CLLR on Twitter, and at his website, ward1guelph.ca. And you can follow Councilor McKinnon at Ward 6 Mark on Twitter, or at his website, ward6guelph.ca. And that is it for this week's edition of the Guelph Politicast. The music for the Guelph Politicast comes from KPM Classics and Sid Dale. The host for the Guelph Politicast is Podbean. Go to guelphpoliticast.podbean.com to listen to past episodes. And while you're there, you can also listen to Open Sources Guelph. If you missed last Thursday's episode on CFRU, you can download it via the Politicast channel on Podbean. You can get in touch with me by email at adamadonaldson@gmail.com. Reach me through Twitter at Adam A. Donaldson. You can go to the Guelph Politico Facebook page at facebook.com/PoliticoGuelph. And of course, you can go to Guelph Politico on Patreon and donate there at patreon.com/GuelphPolitico. If you like locally sourced independent media in the city of Guelph, please consider donating. And for all the latest local political news, check out guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca, where we will have a new episode of the Guelph Politicast for you shortly. And until then, see you next time.